would like to speak today who said they would like to speak their good in the barn voice. So if you can just like be a little bit quiet, we can get started here. I'm Linda Reel. Thank you for all coming. We're here today to express appreciation to Chief Jim Warden for his 30 years of dedicated service to our town. I imagine everyone in this room has a good word to say about him, and I have a few folks who've agreed to come stand up in front and say those words. So I know Dr. Metz is here somewhere. Dr. Metz.
One of the very few times I ever was applauded for opening my mouth. And there have been plenty of times when I've done that. First of all, I'm going to get to the chief, but I just have to express my amazement and my gratitude to Linda, who's organized virtually this whole thing. So we're here this afternoon to say thank you to Jim Warden, a gentleman who devoted a large part of his life in keeping the town of Shelburne and its residents safe and secure, no matter how difficult or inconvenient, no matter what kind of effort was required, Jim was there. And this effort, as many of us know, was not restricted just to police duties. About Jim's skill in his police work, and I'm certainly no authority on that, and I'm sure there are others who could speak more knowledgeably than I could about the police work, but I can say that when it comes to interrogation techniques, the CIA could use some of Jim's techniques. And I'm not talking about waterboarding, by the way. However, it's about Jim's concern for and assistance to the people of Shelburne involving personal matters well outside the boundaries of police duties. That's what sets Jim apart from other police chiefs that we've known. We know about Jim's extremely knowledgeable assistance to the dog owners of our community, not only with its classes, but with individual assistance when necessary. But as a veterinary practitioner here in Shelburne for 41 years, I was able to refer dog owners to Jim with confidence that a severe behavior problem would either be corrected or that Jim would advise the owner of the best method of dealing with the situation. Further, Jim made it his business to stay knowledgeable about potential health concerns affecting domestic and wild animals in our area. Why? Because those problems with domestic and wild animals could threaten the health of our citizens, our residents. But irrespective of all the foregoing, and for many of us in this room, the very most important thing for which we must thank Jim Warden is his approach to the people he served and counseled. How many of us have brought to him personal problems, family problems, legal problems, neighborhood problems, all types of just plain day-to-day living problems. We found a sympathetic ear and wise counsel for over 30 years. We will never forget the gift of all those years, and we hope and pray for good health to Jim and all his family so that we can continue to enjoy their continued presence in our community. Thank you.
a friend from dog obedience class, Pam Loeb. She says she has a good outside voice, too.
I usually have a good outside voice. Getting over a little cold, so I'm sorry if I'm hard to understand. I just wanted to come up today and say thank you very much, Chief Warden. I am not a native Vermonter. I can't call myself a Vermonter, but Vermont is my home. I moved here 5 years ago, and a month after I got into town, I had a young dog. A month after I got into town, I knew there was an obedience class starting up, so I showed up at the town offices looking to start obedience class. And while I wasn't pre-signed up for the class, Chief Warden was generous enough to let me start the class with my dog. And we went through the class, we had a fantastic time. And before I knew it, I continued to attend the class. Here we are 5 years later, I think I attended every session he held. I didn't know a lot of you from class. Because I have this Rottweiler who loves to go to class and thinks it's a lot of fun to show off for everybody. So he's one of the demo dogs for class. Well, I moved here from an area I had lived. I grew up in New York. I am one of those people who, downstate New York, and I'm sort of old school with my dogs and have an old group of people I trained with for years. I moved out of New York to Maryland. I trained with the same group of people for 20 years. I did a lot of stuff. I got really close with those people. When I came here, I felt a little lost. And I was really thrilled to be included in this class and be encouraged to continue to come and sort of be embraced into that little dog-owning community that Shelburne has, which I love. And I was really happy to help out and happy to be able to participate in those classes. But more so, I was happy to become part of the community. And I had come here from the D.C. metro area, and any of you who have never been to some of the major metropolitan areas and don't really understand what a gem we have in our police department here. My husband is a doctor and had a lot of patients who were police officers. He treated the SWAT team, he treated the fire department, he treated police officers. And I'm here to say that the relationship that the community had with the police department was not a very good one. And so when I came here and I met our chief of police, and he couldn't have been a nicer person, and he couldn't have been more welcoming, and every Monday night at the end of dog class, well, dog class ended at, I don't know, 7:30? I don't even remember now. I never got home 10 minutes later. I only lived a few minutes from town offices. We stood around and we talked. And he told us stories about community members and about this person's dog and that person's whatever. You know, I was driving down the road the other day and I had to stop to help somebody. And to hear that a police officer was that really involved with their community was a wonderful thing to me. And I felt very comfortable with Jim, and I felt very comfortable, you know, being a part of that. And when I found out there were going to be no more dog classes, I wasn't just devastated for myself, I was upset for the Shelburne community and the dog owners here. As it happened, we lost our dog park at the same time, so our poor dogs, I don't know what everybody's done in the last year. But, you know, I would love to see that community continue. I'd love to see something like that continue. But more, I'm happy to see that the community has come out today to support our chief, who we love and we miss. And we're happy to have him back here today. And thank you for allowing me.
Paul Boney. I think Paul's in the back. Do you have a good outside speaking voice, Paul? Thank you.
Well, thank you. And thank Paul Goodrich for paving the road so we could get here. Nice to meet you. Told me about his dog classes. It's not really, in his mind, dog obedience class. It's owner education class.
Yeah.
And you probably all know that. Jim, it's been my pleasure to have known you for all the years I've been in Shelburne, worked with Jim for almost 14 years. And one thing I learned about Jim is that he was probably as perfect a police chief for the town of Shelburne as you could possibly look for.
Woo!
he understood the kind of police department the Shelburne citizen wanted. I would once in a while get a complaint from a citizen and say, you know, I see a warden over in Harrington's almost every morning to get the cop. That was true. That was the only place he stopped. But that's the kind of a police chief you want. You want somebody out in the community, meeting the people, talking to people, whether they're tourists or whether they're citizens. He represented the town extremely, extremely well. You know, I really don't have stories to tell about Jim. I mean, he's the guy that had the story. I remember one story that I think it was about Mike Thomas. There was a burglary, and Jim happened to go out with Mike and take a look and see what was going on there. And of course, they used all the very first class police tactics and investigatory tactics to do this. And pretty soon, Mike said to the chief, I said, Chief, I think the person who was the burglar here must have had a limp or something because he had a cane. And Jim kind of looked around and said, I heard a cane? So they did a little more looking around, and pretty soon Jim picked up one of those kitchen stools with the rubber things on the bottom, and every place that person had gone and spilled some flour, and he marked around on the floor, it looked like it was a cane, but it was actually a kitchen stool. The last thing I'll say about Jim is that running a small town police department is not easy. When you have officers that you hire, that you want the quality that we've gotten in Shelburne, and oftentimes they're kind of itchy because they like to become a lieutenant or a sergeant or a deputy chief or something like that. And so it's really difficult to kind of keep everybody happy. Jim was very good at that because he recognized that each officer had their own things that they liked about policing. And so he developed people, and I'll pick on Mike again because he's a good investigative officer. So Jim would recognize that. So if there were cases that came up that required investigation, those officers that tended to go that way, that's where they would spend their time. Others who just liked to patrol, they liked the public, they liked to be out there giving warnings. Then that's where they would go. If they had interest in the school or other areas in town, Jim would be sure that they were lined up, so that's where they would spend some of their time. So when you think about a police department like Shelburne, I say he was a perfect chief. That's the kind of chief that he was. Every once in a while, you would also get people saying, why are we spending over $1 million in a little town of Shelburne on our police department? How much is it now, Jerry? $1.5 million?
At least that.
$2 million, whatever it is. But when you talk to people around town, it was very, very well spent. They really appreciated the fact that Shelburne, a very safe town. Not that you're not without any issues here, but the police department were out and about, and they really kept things under control in this town. And it was, most people I found loved our police department, and they did not mind spending $1 million or whatever it was, and I'm sure that's the case that's going to be going forward forever. So, Jim, have fun with the horses. Be careful. Jim is prone to falling and get hurt. So watch out for him, will you? Make sure that he doesn't do more than he should. Anyway, enjoy your time, sir.
Thanks, Paul. And our last speaker to have a word about Jim is Chris Morrell.
I came here from Saratoga County, New York, to become the first full-time officer and police chief in Hinesburg. And when I got here, it was explained to me that there weren't any real officers of Hinesburg. There were five that were with Shelburne, and there was one that was with South Burlington. and all the dispatching came through Shelburne. So I said, you know, I probably should go over and meet the chief in Shelburne. So I drove over, and I came through the front door, and Al Fortin said, oh, Chief, Chris Morrell from Hinesburg's here. And he turned and he looked at me and he squinted and he pointed his finger and he said, I know you! I said, well, this visit went to hell pretty short order. And then he said, a couple of years ago I asked for some canine information and you sent it to me right away. Oh. It's probably a reflection on the administrative abilities of a lot of police officers. But let me tell you, Hinesburg owes Jim Warden a large thank you. When I got there, in addition to part-time officers from Shelburne, I also found out that almost every piece of equipment in the police station was a hand-me-down from Shelburne. And he also went out of his way to help the department to work around schedules. His people worked a regular 8-hour shift so that when they worked in Hinesburg, they could only work 6 hours because they needed time to go from there to there. And Jim just bent over backwards to make sure that little tiny department over there became successful. He and Al Fortin both deserve a lot of praise for that. I'd like to tell you a little bit about Jim Warden's leadership style. There are a lot of police chiefs in the world. Most of them lead as commander of an LSD. Large steel desk. Jim was out there on in the street, on patrol. If you had a call, frequently he would roll right up along with a car assigned to it. And I don't know if you ever noticed the color of his shirt. It was blue. A lot of chiefs wear a white shirt. There's a good reason not to wear a white shirt. One, you should make a great target. And you probably also noticed that he wasn't decked out in all kinds of spangles and brass doodads and so forth. If you looked closely on his collar, you could see his rank. It was about that big in the state chief. He's definitely not one to put on airs. He also asked all his officers and the dispatch staff for participation in a lot of the decisions made in the police department. Something that's not too common now. Had a lot of common sense, but he did not tolerate prima donnas in his department. If you were there, you weren't there to grandstand, you were there to deliver police service to the taxpayer. He was also probably one of the most far-sighted police chiefs in Vermont. He recognized before 911, long before, the value of centralized communications. And that was a godsend to many of the different emergency service providers in this general area and down into Addison County. Now, you heard people joking about Jim going to Harrington in the morning, 9 o'clock. Well, a number of educated college professors have done a study. You know what they found out? Cops shouldn't be eating their sandwiches back in the station, or they shouldn't be huddling in large groups in a local restaurant with their backs to everyone. They should be doing just what Jim was. In fact, they even have a name for it. Coffee with a cop. And he did provide a lot of advice, and it amazed me, his breadth of knowledge into everything from policing to marital affairs. So, Jim, I noticed one of the things you really appreciate is brevity, so I'm going to stop speaking. But let me say one thing. You left behind a very classy police department led by a very classy chief.
Would you like to come next? You may come up.
I would like the chief to come up with me.
Oh, chief.
Sir, I finally get to read this to you face to face. I wasn't planning on speaking, but I want to deliver this to you in person.
Thank you.
To a friend. There are many things about you that folks came to trust and know. Your love for this community, our grateful hearts we bestow. You always had a funny tale to bring laughter to our day. You could settle those in distress in a firm yet calming way. For 30 years you gave beyond the call to serve and protect. From people to dogs, you were there to resolve abuse and neglect. With wisdom and understanding, controlling situations. With compassion in your heart to avoid confrontations. Jim, we wish you all the very best on life's journey as you go. You will forever be a friend, and one we're proud to know.
By the people of Shelburne to receive the Colleen Haig Public Service Award. And we would like to now present that award to you, Chief.
Established by the town a year ago for two reasons. One, to recognize the extraordinary selfless service of Colleen Haig. And the other reason was to create inspiration among all of us for service of that kind. We've come together to honor the recipient for the 2018 Colleen Haig Award, Chief Jim Worden. The kind of selfless service that this award memorializes. In an extraordinary way, he managed to be the arm of the law and also a helping hand, often at the same time and compromising neither. It's an attribute, it's a way of believing. It's a professionalism that is in very short supply. And those of us who are professionals in community service are the first to recognize an absolute master in Jim Warden. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your service to the community and are very pleased to present you a loving cup.
Say all these nice things. Dr. Metz, we go back to when I worked in St. Albans City years ago. One of my vet friends was his friend, and we were into dogs. Dr. Metz was a personal friend. We'd get out. He was the only veterinarian in the area that didn't ask, give me money before he looked at an animal that got hit on the road. He was always there for us. And I would stop at least once or twice a week at his office, and his help would say, go right back in. I go back in. He could be operating, whatever. Now, I didn't interfere with anybody's animals. I do know that he got annoyed with me one day and basically said, you can leave. I walked in, he's operating on a rat. Who operates on a rat? And he says, a pet owner. time, but while I have the chance,
we love who we love.
Tell you, if you don't mind, do I have a couple of minutes? I do want to mention that I came here years ago. Frank Thornton was the acting chief at that time. He was a sergeant. He then got promoted. Larry Wood. We worked for Larry Wood, and he was then promoted to a lieutenant. We hired different ones. We didn't have many officers at that time, did we, Frank?
I mean, we would
run long shifts. I know that sometimes I wouldn't get home till 2 o'clock in the morning. And Frank, we would split once in a while. Frank would be days, I'd be on nights, and it was kind of unique to have that arrangement. But with that department, we grew not by much. We grew very slowly. And as we grew, we got better. Now, one of the things that comes up nowadays is the sexual harassment in the workplace. I'd like to say we were way ahead of the game. We didn't need posters on the wall. We didn't need all that excess training. And it wasn't long till we had one of the officers we dismissed. Why? Sexual harassment. We weren't going to stand for it. So we were ahead of the game. Weren't we, Frank? We were ahead of the game. Then along come young Jimmy Mack. Jimmy's been with me for years. Trish, Lori Fox, loyal employees. But when I go back, and it bothers me when I hear the public say, some of them, not the people in town, but when I hear the rumors that you don't have this, you don't have that, you never did that, and so forth. I just want to let the taxpayers, some of you from out of town, to let you know we were the first ones in the state of Vermont to be legalized to put in car computers in our cars. And it was for over a year, we could not hook them up because the state hasn't reached that level. And once we did get moving, then Frank and Jimmy were getting calls from other police departments. How does this work? We want to get on. So we were the first ones to deal with that. And we were first with an Explorer program that actually turned around and handled for a couple of years all the traffic at the museum. I don't think many of you know that, but our Explorer program was well trained. They were trained on how to direct traffic. We had an officer assigned work with them. They did all this, and at the end of the season, the museum gave our Explorer post a large check, and they appreciated us being there. They didn't have to spend money on their own security people, and they didn't want to do it, and our people did. We used them to search for evidence. We trained them. We didn't put them in anything that was dangerous. They could ride in the cars. They had to stay in, but they could jot down information that was important to the officers that we had at that time. So they were a real plus with it. The real plus that came along, and I want to thank you, every one of you, for turning down the venture to become part of a joint dispatch center.
Yeah.
And the reason why I tell you, that is I have all the evidence to go with it. When the consultant came, we went through this in Vision 2000, and that's back in the year 2000. The big push was to central dispatch. We took part in that. We were listened to. People would ask. Chris Morrell, at one of the meetings later on after that, said one day, why don't you ask the Shelburne chief here about central dispatch? That's what they're running. They're running a central dispatch. The only one that came forward and listened to us was the former town managers that we had. Paul listened. Larry Wood was the first man that I came to work for. Bill Finger was a long session in there like Paul was. And they were just great guys to work for. And they would, Larry was the first one that when he'd go away for weeks at a time, he said, you're the acting manager. Well, acting manager, police chief, I needed the officer, I needed everybody. But as we did that, one of the things that by doing that with them, I got to work with all the department heads, and they were dreams to work with.
We put together a budget,
yes. And the one year, Colleen Hagg, myself, Ann Dutton, and we put this budget together. That is the first year that I can remember that when we put that budget, we included the select board members, not all of them. They had a couple of them that were assigned, so we didn't violate any laws of having a meeting. And so we put that budget together. And that is the first year. Then I was asked years later not to come to the meeting, but we put that budget together. And when we put that budget together, it took all of us. Now, besides that, I said, I have an idea. I would like to go to the rabble rousers in town. And they looked at it and said, what do you intend to do? I want to run this budget by them because on town meeting night, they're going to tear this apart. So let's take them head on, let them review it. What kind of complaints do they have and so forth? And we did. It worked out. That's the first year there was nobody except one man in the audience asked how much we're spending on cleaning the restrooms in the police department and what the toilet paper and the paper towels cost. Well, needless to say, none of us could answer that. Who would think about that? But going back to the dispatch, they brought in a Vision 2000. It was not very good. It was $30,000 obtained by Senator Leahy. Then another $30,000, they spent $60,000 on studying this and how wonderful it would be. I was the only one that was asked to be there that ever worked under a county radio system. And I worked under one poor one, one good one in Pennsylvania years ago. And it's not as easy as they were trying to make it seem. It's very costly, equipment, training, and so forth. And so we backed out of that one and it fell apart because some of the people had jobs already lined up for themselves. They were going to feather their own nest, and that went down. And one quick story, we're coming from one of the meetings, and as we're leaving the meeting in South Burlington, as we're coming down, we hit Swift Street. As we come down Swift Street, I yell, "I'm driving." Jimmy Mack sitting on the other side of me. Bill Finger, our town manager, is in the back. And I yelled, "We're taking them head on." The car aimed head on at us. Well, I swerved to the side, took out the side of the car. And Jimmy jumped out chasing after him because we figured they're going to try to get away. And then they got tangled up switching drivers and run into a fence. Jimmy was a key witness to that. Switching, they were both dead drunk. Bill says, "I never knew it was like that out here. What a lot." The unique thing of it is, that this car that we had, we obtained a lot in the town of Shelburne without taxpayer money. The car that we were in was an FBI, had been used by the FBI and turned into Plattsburgh. But we were tied into the government surplus. And I want to explain the government surplus. We didn't get guns and tanks and all that kind of stuff from them. What we got from the government was all legal, and why shouldn't we get it, is that we got desk, we got file cabinets, you name it. We got equipment for the down at the garage. We got. So we obtained a lot of stuff. So when they heard this car was totaled out, Plattsburgh called Colonel Gore up on 15, at the base up there. He calls, "We got you covered." Rel McCusker, good friend of Pete Gadge's there. He loves that woman. And I don't know what yeah, here he is. Rel McCusker. Rel says, "We got a car for you. We're going to get it delivered to you." And it was identical. The FBI all wore the same hats. They wore the same suits. And they drove the same car. So we got another one. Nobody knew the difference. But anyway, then we went on. Were asked about the Central Dispatch, I asked the question, what about the people we're dispatching for? What about these people? Right. They came in and took us and helped us out. We got a lot of revenue out of these people, and we do, and it's a team effort. And when the consultant reviewed this, it was a man and a woman, they reviewed it, they came back to us before they gave their final report and said, "You got what they're looking for. This is what Chittenden County wants. What do you think about that?" And I said, "Well, you know, they want to spend a lot of money. You want to once you put all these people together and go for it, why do we want to do that when we are already doing what we're the number one? Our dispatchers take the call, and when they take the call, they dispatch the call, whether it's down in Addison County, wherever it is." I know we had airplane crashes. The state even backed out and says, "Let your department go." Trish is in here somewhere. She was one of them, and the one night, I don't know who the second was with her, the airplane. Then we had the train wreck in Middlebury. We handled the whole thing. So why would you want to change something that's working very perfectly to go into the unknown? And when I looked at the plan of what's going to be spent for personnel and this supervisor and that supervisor, all I can see is dollar signs. And why do we want to change something that works? Why do we want to go into the unknown? So I thank you very much for that. That's really a plus that you've decided. And this isn't the first time. Back, what was a year, Frank? Jimmy, you would remember. Maybe Pete would remember. When did they decide they wanted us to go up and be gobbled up by South Burlington?
Well, it was around 85 or something.
Yeah, they wanted us to become part of South Burlington. We would relinquish our police department, and some of us would get jobs in South Burlington and so forth. And the people rose up at that time, passed it on to the select board members and said, "No, absolutely not." Now, one of the things that we did was, Well, let me tell you, I don't want to go on and on. I gotta say this. He had one of the most successful operating system that you could want as far as a town. I run across Bill Finger, him in Agway and Middlebury about 4 weeks ago. And actually the manager asked Bill and myself to go off to the side, out of the way of the public. About 45 minutes we spoke about the town of Shelburne. And what a good operation we had. And that goes from Paul back to Larry. The select board members, we had there for a while. Colleen probably remembers this. We had on Monday mornings, every Monday morning, we would have a staff meeting with the people working in the main office. And that was in the old building. And we would meet and go over who's going to be doing what this coming week. Who's going to do that? Who needs help? And the select board members were also invited out to come out, not all of them, but one or two, to come sit in and add to it. It was the most wonderful operation you could ever want. We had differences of opinion, but we did not have any problems with scrapping amongst each other and angry. It was a perfectly run system. From Paul back, and it was just out of sight, and I wanted to say that. Now I promised you, and then I'll quit. Two funny things. Larry Wood, when he was the manager here, he would ask me to cover for him, and under statute I would cover for him. And so Paul didn't want to. He was taking care of the roads and did a fabulous job with that. And so did every department head. Did a great job. But anyway. As he's leaving, he's going to go for five weeks? He was going for 5 weeks out to Lakota Mountains, wherever that's at, Colorado or somewhere. He's going to go out there and make sure you don't cause any problems. He tells me, no problems, okay, Larry? And stay away from my desk. Now, to describe this all, Colleen will tell you, there were stacks of paper around the whole room. That hot, right? That hot.
No shit, Sherlock.
His desk, in the pull-out drawer, had stacks of paper that high. Don't touch them. Yeah. And don't touch my telephone messages. I said I was going to put them in order. No. Okay. All right. So when he came back at the end of that 5 weeks, I had a note for him on his phone at home. We didn't use cell phones much at that time. And I left a note, when you get in here, because he had a habit of coming in there at 11:30, 12 o'clock at night to work. So he sees my note. Tomorrow morning, I want you to spend the morning with me. I have some important things I got to run by you. At Monday morning, we meet, and he said, what do you got? I said, well, there's a tree over at the old library that I had cut down.
You what?
You don't cut down trees. People want to chain, oh yeah, they want to chain themselves, and I got some of the people to save the trees to come over, and you could climb inside that tree. It was all rotted out, and I asked them, do you want it to fall on you? Especially if you chain yourself. You won't chain yourself. Okay, so the next thing I want to tell you, I hired a person. That was for Paul. It was Chris Boyd. We hired him back. He had worked for Paul. He wanted to come back. Hired Chris Boyd. Well, how'd you hire him back? I said, fired a guy. And he says, you fired somebody. Yep. And he goes on, why? So I explain, okay, all right. And what else? I said, this is the biggie. And you got to get in the car with me. And we get in the car. We're driving. We go down to the town garage. And he says, what are you going to show me? I said, you look over in that parking lot, as Ryan and Paul's parking lot there. And he says, what's a New York City cab doing there? I bought it. Now, the story to that was he liked it after it was done. We bought it at 187 miles on it. Well, it's not guaranteed, 187 miles. It was hit. No, the front fender got caught coming off the car ramp and it tore it, so they totaled it out. The guy from one end. So I bought it for $8,000. A new police car at that time was $13,000. This one had kick plates and everything on a small motor, who cared? And so we bought that, and it had the numbers and the rates on the side. Oh my God. What about guarantee? Where anything happens, I said, I already took care of it. I went to Cobb Chevrolet, they called me. They're going to cover the warranty. So they covered the warranty for the car. So he was happy with that. But the highlight of that thing was, while he goes in his office, I'm in there the second day, and his papers fall off, and wedged in between the papers was a rotten apple. So anyway, that was when he went away, he gets nervous because he didn't know. But with the military stuff, we got all that stuff. We got stuff for Heinzel, we got Heinzberger car, a four-wheel drive. We didn't have one at that time. And Paul does a wonderful, wonderful job. And I don't know if it was Bill Finger one day or Paul, one of them said, why do we need the four-wheel drive cars? I said, patrol the town. 28 square miles, patrol the town. Not the roads. How about those driveways that we have to go up that are 900,000 feet in, down to Shelburne Farms or Southern Acres? And I said, the boss would state, if we go in an emergency, we need it. So that's why we went. The other thing we did then is sold our old cars. We never passed on to any other department. They never helped us with it. We sold the cars out of state for $10,000 instead of $1,500. That's it.
Like Pam said, it's all class. We always had to stand around and talk. So we're going to wrap up just with a little gift, and then we have one more thing we want to do. So. Jim, I'm going to read this first. I'd like to present Jim with a couple gifts from Shelburne residents and some of the businesses in town. You have gone above and beyond in your role as police chief for 30 years. You have been more than a police chief. You've been a teacher, a mentor, a Santa, and a friend. And these are just a couple things from us that we'd like to present to you. This is from our friends at Vermont Teddy Bear. They made this for you, and they send you your best wishes, and you can open that in front of everybody.
Okay.
They made it special for the chief.
I wonder what it is.
Chief Paws, it says, it's embroidered, 30 years exemplary service, forever grateful, the people of Shelburne. Yeah. A little token from the people of Shelburne. Jim, you treat yourself to something wonderful. And there's one more thing.
Oh my God.
One more thing here. Okay.
Oh!
Every police chief needs a canine friend. This actually says Madison.
Oh.
And it says Shelburne Police Department Canine Unit. And of course, Madison needs her own dog biscuit. So. We have one more little bit of business here. Before the business, there's food, there's dog biscuits in a basket over there. Help yourselves, but we want to be here for this right now. We have one last surprise. I surprised him. His brother from Pennsylvania and sister-in-law came up yesterday. He had no idea they were coming, so we're so happy that they're here. And it's every police officer's honor to sign off duty when they retire.
I don't think I can do it.
Trish is going to call you.
One. Get it one. Thank you so much.